exactly how I feel as my hair is so ugly. And I think Joe is I think Joe's been waiting to say something, so I'll let you go.
Well, no, but I think I had a great point from what Eric was talking about and how you need to frame the issues. So one of the first things they teach you in law school is to know your audience. So the system we have, unfortunately, isn't parliamentary, right? It's not made of coalitions and different groups. We've got a two-party system, right? So I agree with Eric when he says, I think the majority of voters would vote to have clean air and clean water. Unfortunately, they're being asked to put that up against their right to, say, pay lower taxes or own a gun or other things that are close to their heart and close to their values. And so as a lobbyist before coming back to Madison from D.C. and joining Neighborhood House, one of the key ways of changing hearts and minds is to find different ways to make the case. So for climate, I think there is a real opportunity in the next few years out there for a partnership between climate activists and business, right? You can say it may cost an upfront investment right now, but think of the long-term financial benefits of a clean environment, of a healthy populace, right? That's more customers, right? So there's other ways to frame these issues to try to fit in climate with every kind of voter. And I think the more we do that, you could see some success in this issue and other issues as well, right? You know, look at other political issues that have seen success that same way, right? They've reframed the issue and built a really broad coalition. And I think that's the way climate activism is going to have success.
Mm-hmm. Do you think partisanship also plays a role in that and kind of looking at it as an issue on one side versus the other? Or is that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think partisanship is key to everything these days because Eric made another great point in the first half about the stakes being so high. Not only are the stakes really so high, but the stakes have been artificially high for so many years with a 24/7 media and social media and CNN's breaking news all over the TV every day. I feel like I can't keep up. And it's very stressful, and that's not great for mental health, and it's not great for, you know, the tone of debate in the country. And important issues like climate change that really matter to a lot of people can get drowned out in the noise. And you end up in a fight between the two loudest people, right? The most extreme people, where 90% of us in the middle just want to have our voices heard. And as we've been talking today, right, what's the roundabout way back to the beginning of this conversation? The way to change that is to get involved in primaries, right? Like August 9th. Don't just get involved in November. Pick the candidate that's going to be on the ballot. If you don't like the candidate that, say, the party is presenting to you, well, there's always an activist candidate, right? There's always room for an activist candidate. Go out there and make it happen. So, yeah, great point, Noemi, about partisanship.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, I also kind of wanted to talk about kind of the national scale as we're seeing and talking about kind of these larger Supreme Court cases and how that kind of boils down to a local level and how that comes down to the scale that we're looking at on a local level and what we can do to kind of combat something on a national level with the elections for a local level. Kind of a large question, but we can take some time to talk about it.
Well, if I could start once and then I'm going to let Eric take, because I've been now talking too much. I'm getting hoarse over here. But we see with the Supreme Court's another example of a system that is sometimes not representative of the voters, right? So you've got a Democratic Party that has won the popular vote in 92, 96, 2000, 2008, 2012, 2016, 2020. So that's 7 of the last 8 elections. That's over 3 decades. That's not a short sample size, right? You're consistently seeing one party get the majority of votes. But due to political shenanigans, you've got a 6-3 conservative court that's handing down these decisions that impact people's lives, people who may not have the education, right? They may not understand where these extremist wild laws are coming from. So it's another example of having to get educated and get involved and really change the system.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree too. I think a lot of the issues that we see in terms of these folks who are getting elected to office who just like flat out do not reflect the will of the people has really gotten seen now in like a pretty glaring national spotlight with the Supreme Court. I'm hoping, I'm trying to remain hopeful that, you know, these attacks on like reproductive rights and like the EPA's ability to regulate carbon emissions and other like potential rights that people are worried about might also slip away or be rolled back. I'm hoping that is another really, you know, something that like lights a fire into people's like asses. I think you can say that on here too.
Yeah,
and,
no.
And like, you know, propels people to get out and advocate for their rights before, you know, before it's too late too, because the Supreme Court are unelected, like pretty much lifelong positions. And we at least have the ability to change that with folks who are like elected, and, you know, voting and going through the ballot box is something we can do, not really through our judiciary, but it is something we can do to change through our like legislative and electoral processes too.
Yeah, and Eric made a good point. Historically, the Supreme Court relies on legitimacy. And so historically, FDR, when the New Deal was coming in, the court was a bit conservative. And they had signaled that they were going to shoot down a lot of his New Deal programs. And he publicly said that he was going to appoint more justices until they... Now, that's a terrible... I would be the first one to say I would disagree with that move, right? Because then each side will just keep adding and there's completely no courts and what... But just the bluff brought them back to the negotiating table, and they sort of made a deal that put these... And I think a lot of people perceive the current administration as unwilling to take that step and, you know, make that effort. You know, why do we have 9 Supreme Court justices? Because we decided that we wanted one per circuit court back in the 1800s when there were 9 circuits. Well, there are 13 today. Well, wouldn't it be convenient to have 13 justices right now, a 7-6? But even the bluff of that doesn't seem realistic right now. And I think that's what you could see in future national elections, is a shift towards candidates who could make that, you know, who could make that bluff a little more realistically.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for both of your comments. And I know that we will be going to our musical section. And yeah, but we'll be back. Thanks for tuning in. And thank you to both my guests.